It was a magical opening week for the NFL season. How Aaron Rodgers managed to lead a monster comeback on one leg and what it might mean for the Packers offense going forward. Plus, Ryan Fitzpatrick torches the Saints as Tampa reminds everyone they can still play. Kirk Cousins shines as a Viking. Patrick Mahomes lives up to the hype. And the Browns didn't lose. We've got plenty to break down on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We have just finished week one. If you were a little bit underwhelmed by the opener on Thursday night, I think today more than made up for things here.
That was an all-timer. The Sunday night game was an absolute A-plus all-timer. The highs and lows emotionally for both sides, both fan bases, and mm-hmm. then good football play. That's what I like, too. It wasn't like something fluky happened. I don't like it when fluky things happen. I do, but I don't. The analyst in me hates it. This was good football. The Packers came back and won that game playing good football. It wasn't something fluky here. I love that game.
It really was. I can't remember a game in which you. I mean, look, I don't care who wins Packers Bears, but I think everyone was sick to their stomach when Aaron Rodgers went down with what looked like a very serious knee injury, which still might be a very serious knee injury. We don't know at this point. And that was it. That was going to be it for the Packers season. And then to actually have him come back and then come back and win the game is that's something that. I don't think I've ever really seen before. I've seen amazing plays at the end of games to win it, but I've never seen a team go into those depths and then come back up and do it in a single night like they just did. Let's start with that game. Sunday Night Football. Gosh, yeah, this was like a whole season just sort of crammed into 3 hours here. Let's start with Aaron Rodgers. If you somehow missed it, suffered a knee injury. He said after the game it was knee. We don't know any details beyond that. I'm sure there are plenty of people on Twitter who don't know what they're talking about who are currently speculating about it, so you can check it out there. But we just know it's a knee injury, left knee. He was clearly limited. He was barely mobile. He was basically just taking a snap and standing for the entire second half here. But from a X's and O's standpoint, Andy, how does that change the Packers' offense? Because they rely so much on Rodgers extending plays and making plays out of structure. This, by necessity, all had to be very on schedule and within structure after he got hurt.
I think you could argue, and I am not espousing this as a season-long argument, but certainly in this game, this is inarguable for this game, the Packers' offense got better after Rodgers got hurt because discipline was instilled upon them. They had to play on schedule. Everybody had to play on schedule, had to play quick, neutralize the Bears' pass rush because Rodgers couldn't move anywhere. Rodgers, to his credit, did not rush himself. He stayed patient. He worked deep into his progressions when need be. He still moved within the pocket. And this is what's so fascinating about Aaron Rodgers. We've had this conversation 100 times, Gary. Is he is capable of playing this way. He's capable of beating you like Tom Brady beats you with quick strike throws from the pocket, nuanced pocket movement. We saw that in this game. For whatever reason, he often chooses not to do that, and that's what he was doing early in this game against the Bears. He was choosing not to do it. He was leaving the pocket at times. I thought that might happen when they brought him, when he came back in as well. At least he'll be more disciplined now. He'll have to be. And I wonder if Mike McCarthy, what the, I'd love to hear their conversation when they're watching this film, in this, the second half film on Monday, because it can't just be patting Rodgers on the back and saying, hey, you're gritty and tough. There's got to be a lesson to take away from this. That was a really well, high functioning offense in the second half.
I mean, it seemed like a lot of it was a half full of a lot of pick plays. We've seen that basically. I don't know, what do you call that play where basically the receivers immediately block and it's sort of like a extended screen play where there's essentially just one guy you're throwing to and everyone's already blocking downfield.
Yeah, those out routes to the slot, and they normally throw them out of trips. And in this game tonight, for whatever reason, they threw them out of 2x2 sets. So it was just one slot receiver. Usually there are two receivers outside and then a slot, an inside slot receiver who catches those. But they did them out of a different formation tonight. It's probably, in their minds, an extension of their running game. Those are about 5 to 7 yard completions pretty consistently.
Yeah, this was, I mean, man, they were down 20 to nothing when he got back on the field. This was unreal that it was unreal that he got back on the field, let alone actually led them to a win while playing on one leg here. And look, it also speaks to Aaron Rodgers' natural arm talent. The fact that he was still zipping passes all over the place when he couldn't plant.
Yeah. And here, like, let's look at that game winning touchdown to Cobb as a great play. Mm-hmm. That's he extended from within the pocket, which broke down two man coverage, so man to man with two safeties over the top. And what the Bears did on that play was take one of those safeties and have him pick up Cobb on the crosser route. We've seen other teams do that before, and they switched off. So a cornerback who was on Cobb now became the free defender, and it was safety Eddie Jackson left on Cobb. It's the right move to make because you're assuming the ball will get out. And that's why extending plays without breaking down plays is so incredibly difficult to defend. That's why Luck was great years ago. That's why Wentz is great now. That's why Brady and Rodgers are first-class superstars, because the coverage will naturally break down. The Bears played their coverage perfectly, but they had a safety left on a receiver. And what I'm getting at, Gary, is what gets lost in all of it. That was a really tight window throw that Rodgers made. The Bears did not just fall on their face and give up a touchdown there. Rodgers threaded a needle.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, obviously, a couple plays before that, you had the play where Devontae Adams got tangled up on a little natural rub and ball hit Kendall Fuller in the chest, and he didn't come down with it. And that would have clinched the game in all likelihood right there. Couple quick notes on the Bears defense here. Khalil Mack was, I haven't seen an official snap count. I would have guessed he played maybe 40% of the snaps.
Yeah,
just
felt like that.
Guessing. Yep. And obviously he flashed dominance in this one. He almost chased down Randall Cobb on that last play, by the way. He was like the last one who almost caught him on the goal line.
His dominance in the first half was also a little bit emblematic of Chicago's overall defensive play. He was the punctuation point on some really strong sentences constructed by the Bears defense. They were very sound in the first half.
And the other side of the ball, I mean, look, the Bears, I think we were all really excited with what the Bears did in the first quarter. They were creative and weird. I mean, they ran Charles Leno out and split him out wide twice, their offensive tackle, and ran a couple plays off of that, one of them being Trubisky's rushing touchdown in the first quarter. I'm going to ask you this, Andy. It's going to sound a little bit harsh, but is this – I just think back to the Chiefs last year where it was all these bells and whistles early in the season and they were catching teams off guard, and then it all – everyone sort of caught up to it as the season went on. And I know that's a cliche and it's a very general thing to say, but that's kind of what happened to the Chiefs last year. It's almost like that happened within this game because the Bears offensively did nothing, and their receivers are still not really good enough. Trubisky might have had to be better tonight, but they did nothing after the first quarter in that game, except for what seemed like it might have been a sort of a clinching drive there in the fourth quarter, which obviously ended up being all for naught.
Yeah, I think these teams that do these bells and whistles, as you call it, they're going to be better in scripted plays naturally because you can really script those bells and whistles plays to look like one another and build off each other. You can do that even more than with a traditional, well-put-together game plan script. So those teams, the Chiefs tend to start hot as well for different reasons. What dried up Kansas City's offense last year was defenses started playing more man coverage against them. And the Packers have a lot of man cover corners right now. Those rookie corners played well tonight. Kevin King played well. Tremont Williams, who might be in that Terrence Newman, he never ages group now at this point, he played well at right corner all game. Even the catches that the Bears receivers made were mostly contested catches. Mm-hmm. So it was a strong performance in Green Bay secondary. When you go man-to-man coverage against these bells and whistles offense, and what you're really talking is misdirection offenses, man-to-man eliminates some of the benefit of the misdirection because you're not eyeing as many things as a defender. You're looking at your man. So if he starts on one side and runs to the other and the ball goes the other way, you're not necessarily seeing all that and getting crisscrossed because you're just chasing your man around. So the Bears have to, they need to have some answers for man coverage. That's what the Chiefs didn't do enough last year. Every team's got some answers. And look, this misdirection can beat man at times in certain ways. But they need to get into the stack. They need to do what the Patriots do and get into stack releases and pre-snap motion and shifting and get guys in alignments that force the defense to back off their man coverage. And they do that a little bit, but I think they need to build a vertical passing game out of it to become more threatening. And hopefully they can over time.
Yeah. I mean, this one, after the first quarter, they had 8 drives, and 5 of them were either 3 and out, I should say 4 of them were 3 and out, and then one of them was a turnover on downs in the second quarter when they went for it on 4th down. So 5 of those last 8 drives yielded 0 first downs. That's not going to get it done. So obviously something to build off here if you're the Bears, but this one was in their grasp and got away, and it's gonna make them sick at this point. They could have stolen one on the road in the division, and that's a big deal if you are going to make a run at the playoffs. Speaking of which, let's go down to New Orleans where Tampa Bay, and look, you and I feel like it was me more than you because I feel like I kind of directed this narrative on our behalf, but we've been very dismissive of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers over the last couple of weeks because
you have.
But that's what I'm saying. And then I think you have been caught up in dismissing the Bucs fever that I've created. And that has led to this entire show. I mean, Shelby Royston, our producer, is not talking about the Bucs. No one's talking about the Bucs because we've just sort of been skipping over them. They've been like the, you know, they're the also ran in a really good division, and we just figured no Jameis, tough schedule early on. They're gonna start like 1-5 or something, and it's all gonna go sour.
Yeah.
They went down to New Orleans and they lit up the Saints. They get the road win within the division, which is huge if you do want to make a postseason run. So let's actually give the Bucs a little bit of credit here and talk about this team as a potential contender, especially since, I mean, look, the worst case scenario is you're going to be 1-2 with Jameis coming back. They obviously restocked that defensive line. There's something to work with here. I know the NFC is stacked. That division in particular is stacked, but there's something to work with here in Tampa.
Oh, of course there is. They've got speed at wide receiver and height with Mike Evans, and then speed with DeSean Jackson, height and speed with both those guys. They have flexible tight ends. Their O-line is quietly pretty good, and their defense is much better on paper than it was a year ago, although we did not see that in this game against the Saints today necessarily. Gary, there's a discussion to be had, and we don't need to get too far into it until after week 2 at least. Fran Fitzpatrick, you say they come back, Jameis Winston, worst case, they come back, they're 1-2 with them, or they're 1-2 with Ryan Fitzpatrick starting in their 4th game as well. There's one big difference between Fitzpatrick and Winston, and I'm a big Winston guy, as I think our listeners know. Mm-hmm. Winston's not a good deep ball thrower, and the Bucs know that. And by now, defenses know that. He's a good deep intermediate thrower, so he can hit dig routes, and he'll fit it into tight windows between the field numbers and the hash marks. But for stretching the field, he is not a good deep ball thrower. And we saw that with DeSean Jackson struggling to transition into that offense last year. Well, look what DeSean Jackson did today. If Fitzpatrick throws the ball vertically well, again, I think the Bucs have to be a vertical big play offense to have a shot. If he does that again, there's a strong consideration to have him become the starter just because his type of strengths, or at least let's call it Winston's type of weaknesses, they don't match well to the offense.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've talked about Ryan Fitzpatrick in the past. He's played a lot of games in the past couple of years, going back to the near playoff performance or playoff run with the Jets, I should say, run to the playoffs, and back to his days with the Bills. You get the really high highs, you get the really low lows. Sunday, it was all really high highs. I mean, he attempted 28 passes and threw for 417 yards. He made plays with his legs. I mean, this was a this is pretty close to a perfect game by Fitzpatrick here. I don't know if you can necessarily bank on that coming up, though. And that, I don't know. I just feel like they're going to get to the third game, and they're going to get that, you know, mixed bag that Fitzpatrick is. And I think it's going to make the decision for them to just, you got to go back to Jameis.
Yeah, we'll see. Fitzpatrick, his history suggests he is a mixed bag, but Jameis is a mixed bag too. At this, I mean, let's be honest. Jameis is a very mixed bag.
Yeah, and I will say before we move on here, a nice gentleman on Twitter, Peter Buckley, has dropped us a couple notes before today's game, saying, you know, boy, you guys are really overlooking the Bucs here. And he was right. Look, and he's been a nice guy about it too. So we'll give him credit
for
that.
Okay,
and he didn't rub it in
too
much.
No. This is you. You are overlooking the Bucs. I picked the Bucs in our little gambling thing that we do now at SI, where it's pick someone against the spread.
You did.
Yeah, but that was more about the spread being in the 9.5 range or whatever it was. But I want everyone to know I'm a big Dirk Cutter guy. I believe in
I'm a big Dirk Cutter guy.
Really? Because you said he's on the hot seat, he's going to get fired, and everything's going to fall apart there. I am not in the anti-Bucs camp like you are.
I thought they were going to be playing their backup quarterback, and starting with the schedule, they'd be 1-3 or 1-4, and things would just completely go downhill this season. I thought it was going to be a lost season.
NFL teams are all good, Gary. The bad ones are good too.
You're right. I let my imagination get away with me. How's that, Andy?
That's decent.
Well, I'm very sorry to the Bucs fans out there. We're going to have to recalibrate. I'm going to have to recalibrate. I'm sorry, Andy. And I did notice that I was shocked to see you wrote a best bet thing for Max Meyer in our gambling vertical. And you had the best call of the week. I had the Cardinals beating the Redskins, so that didn't work out so
maybe
well.
Maybe I ought to host that Friday podcast with Scott Grambling.
Maybe. I did all right the rest of the way, though. I went like 9-3 on Sunday. It's okay. I'll be all right. Before we move on, Andy, you know, only with NFL Game Pass can you replay every game all season. It's NFL football anytime on your time. There were so many great games in Week 1. Did the Fitz Magic show at the Superdome catch you off guard? Did you miss it? Wondering how the Patriots contained Deshaun Watson this time around? Watch those games the first time or watch them again, maybe with the coach's film angle. See what really happened there. With NFL Game Pass, you can replay every game from every angle. There's the broadcast version, commercial free, by the way. There's coaches film, which shows the all 22 angle the pros and coaches use, and there's the condensed games that let you watch a game in about 45 minutes. Those are tremendous if you're catching up. Remember, with NFL Game Pass, it's game time anytime. Best of all, you can kick off the 2018 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Sign up now at nfl.com/mmqb10things. That's mmqb 10 things, game on. Like Andy always says, and I say it too. I don't want to give you all the credit at this point since I took all the blame for the Bucs thing. But NFL Game Pass, you really should have it if you're into the kind of things that we're talking about, which you probably are because you're still with us. Let's go to Vikings 49ers here. Look, this was the quarterback Kyle Shanahan once wanted and the quarterback Kyle Shanahan ended up with. Who he's quite happy with, by the way. But Kirk Cousins was the better quarterback in this game.
No question. Shanahan shouldn't be overly happy with his quarterback today. They've got some things to work on offensively. It wasn't just Jimmy Garoppolo. The right side of their O-line had some injuries. There were some guys moved around, and the Vikings did an unbelievable job in this game of disguising overload blitzes, which is what Mike Zimmer is known for. He's no longer a double-A gap guy as his stamp. Mm-hmm. He'll use different fronts, and a lot of them are five-man fronts now, and then bring extra bodies more than you can block on one side. And they had that on the Mike Hughes interception for a touchdown, which is a huge swing in the game because George Kittle had just dropped a wide open play on a designer zone beater that Shanahan's known for. So the Niners, their play works, they don't execute, and then they get out executed and outsmarted the next snap, and all of a sudden it's a 14-point swing potentially. Garoppolo was off on the Rhodes interception and it mistargeted, and then it was a very bad read on the Harrison Smith interception, which was Minnesota's most basic congruent regular zone coverage that they play. Harrison Smith has had a ton of picks in his career, the backside defender in those zones. So three interceptions that were really the difference in the game, and you could argue at least two of them were blatantly bad quarterbacking by Garoppolo.
I was going to say, our Jenny Rentis was out in San Francisco for a while doing that Jimmy Garoppolo big feature we did. And when one thing she came back with, she didn't write it in the story, but she watched a lot of Jimmy Garoppolo practice and said he was high and wide all summer.
Really? Wow, that's interesting.
You saw a little bit of it. Yeah. Not
he missed a touchdown high.
Mouth,
but. Right, no, yep. But no, she did a great job on that story. I wrote about this game for tomorrow morning, for Monday morning, and I referred to Jenny's story getting ready for writing my story. She did a great job, and Garoppolo was high and wide on the missed touchdown to Kittle in the red zone too, which was a 4-point missed throw. So just some things to clean up. Like, I still think Garoppolo is the guy. I mean, I don't think the Niners should be regretting anything. Certainly not. It's one game. He's quick. He's quick and compact. He can make something happen. But Cousins, within the context of the Vikings offense in this game, and I thought he looked very good running John DeFilippo's concepts, he was better than Garoppolo was within the context of San Fran's offense today.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, look, this was a really tough opener for Garoppolo here. You have to go to Minnesota. You're facing one of the NFL's best defense. Like you said, they had some injury problems on the line. They had lost Jerick McKinnon, like we talked about on the preview show here. But they also lost Marquise Goodwin in this game. And I think you know, Goodwin is probably the closest thing you'd say to, you know, from a rapport standpoint, from a talent standpoint, he's probably the number one receiver in that offense. So.
That's who Rhodes matched up against. The Vikings sure felt he was, because that's who they put Rhodes on. Yeah, and he takes the top off the D. I did like Pettis. Dante Pettis, Phil, he basically just played Goodwin's role after Goodwin went in and out of the lineup. But, yeah, that's a big loss. I mean, they need that speed in that game.
Yep. Cousins was, I mean, look, he dropped in a couple of really nice touchdown throws, one to Kyle Rudolph, one to Stephon Diggs. He looked pretty comfortable.
He made plays off of improvised movement, which is always the wild card with him. That's why some teams have felt he's a risky game manager type QB, and he's really probably more than a game manager in his style. But if Cousins is going to play effectively and efficiently off improvised movement, he's going to be a Pro Bowler this year, and they're going to win the division and be Super Bowl contenders big time, because he's so good at everything else when it's a timing and a rhythm play. It's just you don't know what you get with him when things break down sometimes. Today, he made a lot of plays when things break down, and they broke down more than you want, too. The Niners had some new slot blitzes out of fire zone stuff that they don't normally show. That was a big deal in this game, and DeForest Buckner was very dominant for stretches, too. So the Vikings have some O-line and protection issues to clean up as well.
Let's do Chiefs Chargers here. I mean, look, anyone who is looking for that changing of the guard in the AFC West, the year of the Chargers, this is not how you want to start it. Chiefs go out there and win again. Chiefs have now won 19 of 21 against division opponents. This game excited me because I think the Chiefs are going to be, people like points in the NFL. The Chiefs are going to score a lot of points. They're going to give up a lot of points, and you had a lot of that in this game. Patrick Mahomes made you watched this game pretty closely, Andy. What do you think of Mahomes here?
This was the first time I've seen a Mahomes game front to finish. And it's only a second game in the NFL. And that Week 17 game against Denver, that was one of the five or six games I didn't get to on film last year. So I have not been exposed to Mahomes a whole lot before. Within two or three throws, I was in kind of wow mentality. The way that ball zips out of his hand and then into the receiver's hand, it gains energy almost. It does not lose velocity in its flight. His arm might be like something I've never seen. It's pretty special, and I think he can get it vertically. I think he can chuck it far too, for what sometimes that gets confused for arm strength. But what really stood out to me was the bullet throws, the rope throws that he made. He's going to have highs and lows, no doubt. And one of the notes I had watching this game is my sense is you're going to want to disguise your looks and coverages against Mahomes. The Chargers are a pretty traditional, straightforward defense. And the Chiefs, I'm sure, had cover three beaters throughout their game plan. and Mahomes was comfortable executing those, and we saw their misdirection stuff work well. When the Chargers changed it up, you did see a little bit of a frenetic Mahomes, and I'm sure that'll be something to watch carefully. They go to Pittsburgh next week, and he'll see lots of change-ups then.
There was that one throw, I think it was late third quarter. It was like a third and long, and he ended up rolling right. And it's just what it the throw, he's on the run to his right, and the throw came out with such velocity downfield that ended up being a 25-yard pickup to Tyreek Hill. But it almost looks like those old, like, unrealistic Madden versions where it's like you sort of just, like, sprint out with your quarterback and not lose anything off of the arm as far as accuracy and velocity goes, which is not how human bodies actually work. he is a marvel, and gosh, it's gonna be exciting. It's gonna be exciting for he's gonna score a ton of points. I bet he's gonna have like some four interception games too. It's gonna be
I agree.
It's always gonna be interesting. Get NFL Game Pass so you can watch some of these Chiefs games, I guess. Gosh, the Chargers, man. No Joey Bosa in this one. I know we're not going to sit here and break down special teams on this show, but something has to give with the Chargers special teams, because it is a disaster every year. They go out there in this game, first series, they give up a 91-yard punt return. They had a muffed punt. They don't just muff punts. They muff punts and then somehow end up moving the muff to their own 1 yard line and then giving up the turnover. And they missed a field goal. Caleb Sturgis missed a makeable field goal that would have made the game a little more interesting down the stretch here. But
offensively, they had a number of drop passes. Kansas City's defense turned those receivers loose a few times. Travis Benjamin had multiple drops. There was an interception and really nice play by Ron Parker, who had some highs and lows in this game. And I mean that kind of in a good way. I thought especially a guy that came in late, and I know he's been there before, but came in late, joined the team late, and they're thin at safety, and he's playing. I thought he had a nice game. He had a great interception, but Tyrell Williams and Keenan Allen's routes ended in the same place. So once again, you get an interception involving something with Rivers and Tyrell Williams not on the same page. And those guys have almost mastered that. And you don't know what goes on, but between Rivers and Williams, I'm willing to bet it's one guy's fault more than the future perhaps Hall of Fame quarterback's fault. So it was a lot of the same old issues for the Chargers. And by the way, the crowd was all in red, and if they weren't in red, it meant the seat was empty, it felt like.
It's I know everyone loved the Chargers this offseason. I just wanna like every radio show I went on and they were kinda like, how about the Chargers? It's like, I think I'll believe it when I see it. And by the way, they did, speaking of like receivers in the wrong place, Austin Eckler had like a highlight reel catch, and it's like, I think the throw was, he and Keenan Allen were like running down the sideline, like 3 yards. I don't know what's going on with that team, but they
Allen
figure out ways
quicker.
to do things.
Allen looked quicker, by the way. I thought he was phenomenal. Apparently he's lost 9 pounds, which I guess that's a lot when you're in his body type, but his horizontal movement off the line of scrimmage was very good in this game.
Well, the Chargers did roll up 500-something yards of offense here. What did they end up with? Five.
There's some bend, but don't break at the end of that. Kansas City changed their coverages.
541. Chargers, they got some work to do. Getting Joey Bosa back should help, though. Before we move on, Andy, this is it. We're on to week two of the football season, which means a second shot at victory. Bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs all season long at DraftKings, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. This weekend, DraftKings has over $2 million in prizes, and you can play free with your first deposit to compete for your share. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings. You choose when to play. Draft a team every week with no season-long commitment at DraftKings. You are the GM. Just choose your players, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. So if you've been thinking about trying one-week fantasy football, now is the time to play, because nothing makes Football Sunday more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup on the line. Download the app or go to DraftKings.com now. Use the code 10THINGS, that's 10THINGS, to enter a contest for free this weekend with your first deposit and compete for your share of over $2 million in total prizes. That's code 10THINGS, 10THINGS, only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, let's go to Carolina, where the Panthers win a slugfest with the Cowboys. To me, the headliner in this game was Norv Turner kind of said all offseason when people asked him, well, are you going to run with Cam? Are you going to preserve Cam? What's the plan with Cam? And he said, we're going to run Cam. And they did. They ran Cam. They ran him a lot early. It was a lot of zone read stuff. It gave the Cowboys fits. He ends up with 13 rushing attempts, actually led the team in rushing attempts, rushing yards, and rushing touchdowns. So, Yes, Cam is going to run under Norv Turner here, and we'll see what kind of a long-term effect this has here. But, yeah, Panthers got a nice win here.
They did get a nice win. That's a big deal. They need Cam Newton running the ball, and I love that Turner has evolved and is open to doing that. Dallas does not have a style of defense that's always easy to run against with some of the designer stuff that Turner likes. The Cowboys do a lot of gap exchanges. They'll move defensive linemen and slant them after the snap. And when you're a highly schemed running game, it can be difficult to face defenses where the players relocate so much after the snap. So the fact that they A, ran the ball, but then B, ran it pretty effectively. Overall, they had 32 carries for 147 yards as a team. That's extremely encouraging.
Giants-Jaguars. I don't want to get carried away on this because obviously everyone picks on the guy, but Ereck Flowers was matched up early with Calais Campbell. And if you, you know, follow football and even the most general sense, you probably knew that was something of a significant matchup. And the very first play from scrimmage, Giants get a nice 8-yard gainer to Odell Beckham Jr., comes back because Calais Campbell just steamrolled Ereck Flowers, and Flowers had no other choice but to kick out his leg and trip him up. Picks up a big penalty there. Two plays later, picks up another penalty, almost a safety, holding Calais Campbell in Flowers' defense. It was Eli Manning trying to escape. But basically, the theme of this game was, you know, everyone was looking for Odell versus Ramsey. Giants couldn't block the Jaguars, and that mm-hmm. limits what you can do. So it was a lot of, you know, Beckham ended up with 11 catches here, and if you haven't been fantasy, you're somewhat satisfied despite the lack of touchdowns here. But yeah, it was, you know, it was a lot of stuff underneath, and they were just sort of funneling him towards those linebackers, and it was a lot of empty calorie type of catches, it felt like, in this game, and Giants did have a chance down the stretch, but gosh, they were overmatched up front.
I had multiple coaches this offseason tell me, I after going through my film notes, there were a lot of teams that didn't run cover three beater designs against Jacksonville last year. And that's really weird and unusual, because that's the beauty of facing these teams that play the same coverage again and again. Yeah, those teams get better at it, but you also know exactly what you need to do to beat the coverage. There are plays that beat cover three, and so why do we see some teams not attempt them against Jacksonville? And the answer I got every time was, we didn't feel we could block their front. We didn't think we could pass protect well enough. Some of those cover three beaters, if you really want to get into them, they take a little bit of time to unfold. They can be deeper drop backs. And so not only did they feel they couldn't do it, but they then didn't try it. They didn't even attempt it. The Jags defensive line gets teams out of their identity very quickly. That D-line is the best in the AFC, I would say. And I think you could argue that's what actually makes that defense go. As great as that secondary is, that D-line dictates games a lot.
Yeah. I mean, look, the Giants, they got a 68-yard touchdown run, sort of a superhuman play from Saquon Barkley. Other than that, just wasn't much of anything going in this game for them. So 20-15, Jacksonville wins there. Leonard Fournette, hammy injury. So that's that is problematic considering we worry about Fournette's violent running style and how he'll hold up. And to have a hammy the first week of the season, not a great sign here.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on.
Let's go to Cleveland, where the Browns did not lose, which is literally the nicest thing you can say about this performance. Their defense was swarming. Denzel Ward was impressive, even beyond the two interceptions. He made some very instinctive, solid plays here. I think you're excited about this defense. It's a hot take. There's no way of proving this definitively. Perhaps the Browns are right and Baker Mayfield would have taken the field week one and soiled himself and thrown 12 interceptions and everything would have fallen off. They got 6 takeaways in this game and they ran 80 something plays and they scored ultimately 21 points in a game that was exceedingly winnable. All they had to do was try to score points and they would have scored enough, and it was just the most conservative, infuriating offensive, I call it a quote-unquote attack I've ever seen. I mean, Tyrod made one aggressive throw. Joe Hayden had gone to the sideline. Cameron Sutton came in the game. They got Josh Gordon one-on-one. He put it up for Gordon. Gordon made a play because Gordon was a far superior player. They tried it later. Ball was underthrown, and Sutton ended up intercepting it and taking away a chance to get a game-winning field goal there. But the Browns have to – something's got to give here. And they have to start trying to win games at some point.
Yeah, even when they don't lose, they don't win. And – you know, they don't have their left tackle situation figured out either,
yeah.
Gary. And I know Corbett was inactive this game. Desmond Harrison, an undrafted rookie, started at left tackle. If you had gone back after Joe Thomas's retirement and said that ultimately an undrafted rookie starting at left tackle, that position has fewer undrafted rookies play at it than any other position in football. The last guy, and in fact, he was the first guy I could remember in many years to do it, was George Fant for the Seahawks about 2 years ago, I think it was. And that didn't last long. So some questions there. What you just said at QB, left side of the O-line still getting sorted out, and they get 6 turnovers against a very high-powered offense, even if Le'Veon Bell's not there. And it doesn't turn into a victory. I can understand why both teams would feel like this one was a defeat.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to. And by the way, on Desmond Harrison was a physically. He was a fairly highly recruited prospect at Texas. He had some off the field problems there. He was a character concerns guy. I know he was off of many draft boards last spring, and obviously ultimately went undrafted. He was a draftable player on talent. I mean, the Browns are clearly rolling the dice here with guys like Antonio Callaway and Desmond Harrison, who is a guy who if not for the off the field stuff, would have been drafted. He's also coming out of a West Georgia, which I believe is a Division II program. So it was a leap there. Bill Barnwell had this stat here. Browns were +5 in takeaways today, 6 takeaways, 1 giveaway. Since they returned to the NFL in 1999, teams with a turnover margin of +5 or better in a game are 132-4-1. That includes the Browns now going 2-2-1 in those games.
Yeah,
so they're a 500 team. It's just absurd. It was. I'm telling you, I was going absolutely insane watching this game that was so winnable, and the Steelers kept trying to give it to them. About the Steelers, 6 takeaways, or excuse me, 6 giveaways. Messy day. They had the remnants of Tropical Storm Gordon moving through there. High winds, lots of rain. Steelers were up 21-7. They ended up, you know, they allowed a long rushing touchdown to Tyrod Taylor on a scramble. They allowed the Gordon touchdown. They also had a giveaway James Conner fumble that turned into a short touchdown run for Carlos Hyde. The Steelers. Le'Veon Bell was obviously a headliner here. didn't sign his franchise tender, basically leaving $850,000 on the table in this one. I know a lot of Steelers fans are now saying, like, oh, James Conner, look at his numbers. He had 5 catches for 57 yards. He had the big rushing total. We're going to be fine with James Conner. They are fine with James Conner, but anyone who's arguing that James Conner brings the same thing that Le'Veon Bell brings, specifically in the passing game, is out of their mind at this point.
Sure. The question is, does it benefit the Steelers in the long run to have Bell come along in the second half of the season? So Conner plays basically the first half, and then Bell comes in fresh right when Conner's starting to wear down. Conner hasn't played a full NFL season as the guy before, of course. I don't see the incentive. If Bell has now initiated the holdout, besides him getting the money, and that's a big deal, but if he's willing to lose his first check, I assume he's got a plan in place to lose the others. I don't see the incentive for either side to come in and do this right now, maybe after Halloween.
The incentive is clearly there for Bell because he's leaving, he's leaving $850,000 on the table every week he holds out, which is a curious business decision. I like the fact from a principal standpoint he's doing it because it's silly to quote-unquote franchise tag a guy and then pay him as like the 50-something highest paid player in the league. But this makes no sense for him. And look, Steelers have a little bit of work to do at this point. They just miss an opportunity to get a win against the worst team in the league. I don't know. I think there's some sense of urgency to get him back. I understand the argument that you want him fresh, but I think more likely, I mean, look, you get to lighten his workload at this point. You make him a 65-35 split instead of the old 85-15 split he'd been doing. But I don't know. We'll see. I was stunned that he did not sign his tender on Saturday and then just sort of collect his check and be inactive and then get going. But I don't know. Some kind of hardball. Andy, let's go to the lightning-ish round, which will include a... Oh, man, I don't want to step on your joke, so we'll get to it when we get there. But let's start a Patriots-Texans. This was...
No, you're building the joke up too much.
Did.
The joke was we have Dolphins-Titans in the lightning round, and I said it's a lightning delay, and that's really what we should call our lightning round anyway, because it never goes fast enough. But we're going to go fast enough tonight. I believe in you, Gary. Take us through this.
You had no heart in that delivery. It was better when we were talking before the show.
Well, because it feels cheesy.
Sleep-deprived and giggling.
Yeah, a second time it feels cheesy. And when you're building it up like that, it just wasn't worth the build-up.
I liked it.
Let's go. Lightning round.
Thing. Patriots, Texans. Patriots, look, they contained Deshaun Watson this time around. Watson had his big breakout performance last year in New England. Patriots, we'll see how much of it was the Patriots upgrading that defensive front and getting a little more aggressive and how much of it was the Texans still can't block anyone to save their lives. But, this was a pretty solid outing for the Patriots defense, which obviously is helpful and more than enough defense to get – more than enough offense to get by, even with Julian Edelman out. Big day for Gronkowski, even including the questionable catch that everyone's up in arms about.
Bill Belichick knows O'Brien, Bill O'Brien's system. O'Brien comes from New England, and Bill Belichick is facing a young QB for the second time. That has to mean something. That's not nothing. And we've said we're going to see a season of ups and downs from Watson. That's what his film was last year, even though his ups were so enormously up that we're all titillated. But he's going to be a growing pain season for them. It's just the nature of it, and this is one of the growing pain games.
Something of a shootout, back and forth, at least, in Denver. Broncos hang on 27-24. Case Keenum. I like it. I like the risk taking. He had 3 touchdowns. He also had 3 interceptions. But he ends up getting the game winner late, or it wasn't even that late. It was early in the fourth quarter, and then the defense has just kind of held on. But 27-24 Broncos. We'll see if they have enough. offensively.
Well, we wrote Friday about the Case Keenum is a risk-taking QB, and I figured he would take risks in this game, even with Earl Thomas back, because kind of like what we talked about with Jacksonville, and Jacksonville has too good of a pass rush for it to matter, but you know what they're going to be in coverage-wise. That's how you design big plays. You take shots downfield against predicted coverages, and Seattle's pass rush, we have to see it over the course of a few weeks, but it's a remade unit like the rest of that defense. And Keenum's instinct, he's got a little bit of a Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I think he's better than that. But last year he made a lot of really good plays, but that's his natural instinct. He's an aggressive quarterback.
Bengals end up beating the Colts. Andrew Luck looked kind of like the old Andrew Luck in this game, and they certainly didn't mind putting him in I don't want to say harm's way, but I mean, look, he ended up attempting 53 passes. He took a couple of sacks. He did a little bit of running, actually drew an ejection from Sean Williams, who threw a pretty filthy hit as Luck was going down. Helmet-to-helmet shot. Sean Williams got tossed for that in the first quarter. But, yeah, Luck ends up thrown for a 319. He had them driving at the end of this game. And then it was Clayton Fajedalem. Just phonetically, right? I believe.
It's got to be. Wait, what else? Yeah. What other direction does that go in? Fejedelum, I believe. That's off the top of my head.
Fejedalem. Something like that.
Yeah.
I think
well, he recovers a fumble. So a Jack Doyle fumble is the difference between maybe a Luck amazing comeback in week one or a game-winning drive, and now Andrew Luck's the story of week one versus just Bengals beating the Colts and maybe 100,000 people watched on the regional broadcast. I mean, it's a difference in that game. I'm eager to watch this tape. Mark Moravec, our editor, is not super excited to see how Andrew Luck played because I proposed a big column on it. I want to see Andrew Luck play it. I want to see how they adjust. Our buddy Reed Foster sent me some stats that shows looks like the ball, at least statistically, was getting out quicker or at least shorter with Luck underneath. Dink and dunk kind of completions. I want to know if that was how much of that's from the scheme and how much of that is from the way the action played out, especially against a Bengals team that plays a lot of two deep zone coverage. I'm eager for this tape. It's the first thing I'm going to watch Monday morning.
Yep. Anecdotally, I watched most of this game. Mark Murray watched the whole game, by the way, and he is just he's an Andrew Luck hater for some reason. We don't quite know why, but Andrew Luck seemed more willing to quickly check the ball down than he has been in the past. That was, again, you know, it's the broadcast angle. I can't see what's going on downfield, but he seemed a little more willing to get moving to the checkdowns. And by the way, we were just very disrespectful a-holes, me especially, about Clayton Fajedalem's name. But he made a tremendous play on that shot. I mean, he stripped Jack Doyle and then had the wherewithal to scoop it up and run it for a touchdown and seal the game with that. So that was a tremendous play by the rookie seventh rounder there. Dolphins Titans. This was the lightning delay game. It ended up taking 7 hours to play this game. I love the new Adam Gase culture, and I love the turnover there in Miami. They get the win. Costly day for the Titans. Not only the loss, and they've been banged up all summer. Besides losing Cyprian, they it seems like everyone on the defensive front has been hurt this summer. Marcus Mariota goes out with an elbow injury. Unclear how much time he's going to miss, but Blaine Gabbert played the bulk of this game for the Titans. So if you get excited about Blaine Gabbert, that's good news. But for most people, that is not very good news. Delanie Walker is going to be out for a long time. I mean, it was a do not go out and find it. And I know me saying that will make you want to go out and find it, but it was an ugly injury, dislocated ankle, I believe it was. But he's going to miss a whole lot of time, and that's very much big trouble for this offense.
That's a big, big, big deal. That, in fact, to me, that's a death blow. I think that puts this Titans offense under because they don't have any speed at wide receiver. And so everything they have to do to get downfield and explosive plays are what it's about. And that's what that offense that Matt LaFleur runs, it's designed to get explosive plays. That's why he's there. And they got rid of Malarkey and the exotic smash mouth, which was a little bit more methodical, I guess. You have to manufacture those plays by design if you don't have the speed to execute them just by sheer execution. And a flexible tight end like Walker is how you manufacture those plays. Losing him, I don't know if there's a bigger, besides, you know, Beckham going down for the Giants or if Brown went down for the Steelers, besides the first shelf superstars, I don't know if there's a bigger passing game loss, receiving threat loss that a team could suffer than the Titans losing Delanie Walker.
Oh, well, everyone was all excited about Tywan Taylor. Maybe he gets a bigger role. He had zero catches on one target today. So let's see. Bills, Ravens here. This was, but for the second straight year, the Ravens completely dominated the team in week one here. This was ugly. This Buffalo offensive line should not be, the league should intervene. The league should find more talented players to put on their offensive line, because this is not, they are not going to be an NFL caliber team with this front five. Not to mention, I mean, look, you're either running Nathan Peterman out or you're rushing Josh Allen out there. I don't think there's a great option between the two of them. I'd still run Peterman out just to not ruin Josh Allen.
I'm not a big stack guy, but and I didn't see a lot of this game. I'm going to watch a film Monday afternoon. It's on my agenda, but it'll be a quick watch because you're probably not going to have to get too deep into the second half to see what happened in the game. Peterman, 5 out of 18 for 24 yards. He was sacked 3 times. He had 2 interceptions. Starting quarterback. It's they're in a tough spot in Buffalo.
Yeah. Let's see. Washington goes out to Arizona and really manhandles the Cardinals out there. This was a horrible debut for Steve Wilks, and Sam Bradford was really bad in this game. This was very troubling for a Cardinals team that I thought was actually going to be pretty good. Washington was interesting, highly schemed, and look, they got ahead, so they didn't have to rely on just dropping back and putting up a lot of moving the ball quickly, putting up a lot of points quickly. Ton of stuff for Chris Thompson, ton of stuff for Jordan Reed, and then it was Adrian Peterson powering the ball behind this offensive line, and Peterson, who can still play behind this Redskins offensive line, which is healthy again, there's definitely something there.
Oh, yeah. It's an up-the-middle offense. Peterson's a between-the-tackles runner. Reed's an interior receiver. Chris Thompson out of the backfield's at his best on interior screens and checkdowns over the ball. That's where they beat you. And in Arizona, who has a talented, fast defense, in my opinion, that is the way to go after them, is over the middle. They beat them between the tackles, take Patrick Peterson out of the equation. Good start for the Redskins. Really good start here. And Alex Smith had good numbers, too.
Yeah. One more thing from Thursday, kind of a leftover. After we taped the show on Thursday night, turned out Keanu Neal torn ACL. He will obviously be out for the season. Really, really bad break for the Falcons here. Andy, is Eric Reed the answer here? I like DeMonte Casey. I think he's an NFL player. I don't think he's good as Eric Reed, though. Reed coming out of that Robert Saleh defense a year ago, do you bring him in and plug him in a couple weeks?
I think I do. Yeah, I like KZ. I don't know if I start Reed ahead of KZ. I would love to know what they really think of KZ. If he is as dynamic as he appeared to be against Philadelphia, if he's a high-risk, high-reward safety, how comfortable is Dan Quinn with that kind of safety? And I don't know the answer to that. I'd be curious to find out. But if Quinn's not comfortable with that kind of safety, Eric Reed absolutely should be a phone call they make.
And the last part of our show, we are not doing the awards like we used to do them. Andy, we have a new name for the show. It used to be known as the 10 Things Podcast. It is not known as that anymore, but we're going to honor that with the final segment. This is the Thing of the Week. Andy, what was your favorite Thing of the Week? It could be a player, a play, a coach, a moment, whatever you want.
I liked the Tyreek Hill 58-yard touchdown. The slant and speed just taking over. Is that how we're doing this?
No, the Thing of the Week? I was going to do the Tyreek Hill 58-yard touchdown. I cannot believe you just said that.
Well,
oh God! Now
I
got to come up with a
good
new thing.
When speed out quicks angles, so to speak, when speed beats a favorable defensive angle, you don't see that very often in the NFL. That's what happened on that play, though. Chargers were fine in coverage. Hill's just too fast.
I'm going to give it to Adam Gase, and like I said, I believe in this Dolphins team. I believe in Gase. I believe in the change that he made there, as far as that locker room and culture goes. they had to play a 7-hour game, and they ended up winning it. And I think that's a promising start for a team that could end up stealing like a 6 seed in the AFC, where the teams just maybe aren't quite as good as they are in the other conference. And that's our show, Andy. That's a wrap. We're going to be back on... It was a good show. We're going to be back on Thursday with a deep dive show. We're going to preview some of the Week 2 games. We will also have the mini mailbag, so if you have questions, send those questions in. Talkback@themmqb.com. Twitter, Andy_Benoit, or GGremling_SI, or we're both on Facebook. You can get us there. But for now, that's a wrap. Thanks to today's sponsors, NFL Game Pass and DraftKings. Without them, they wouldn't let us do the show, so please support them the way they support us. Thanks to researcher Reed Foster for making us sound smart, and thank you, as always, to producer Shelby Royston, staying up late with us and making sure that we sound good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You really are the best. Like we said, get those questions coming in for the Thursday deep dive show. And of course, remember to listen and subscribe to the MMQB Podcast. You get us 2 days a week. You get the MMQB Gambling Show. You, of course, get the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, with Jenny Brentis and Connor Orr on that show. I almost called him Connor Shaw, former journeyman quarterback. Subscribe to the MMQB Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys on Thursday.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.